Today is Monday, 2nd, 2011. I am Ross Henry.
And I'm Martin Lemelin, and this is CITR News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us?
It is 4 after 5 on May 2nd, and time for a full hour of independent news. It's an overcast and wet election day. What is the meaning of it all? CITR News will cut close to the bone in a continued effort to bring you extensive coverage of local political campaigns. We'll have interviews with all three opposition party members in the Vancouver Kingsway riding, as well as a discussion with Emily Jubinville of Get Your Vote On, who have been making valiant efforts to try and double the youth vote this election season.
We'll also bring you coverage of what has been an historic weekend in the United States with their successful assassination of America's most wanted terrorist criminal and a summary of all major leaders in the final hours of their campaigning. All this
plus your weekday weather forecast right here on News 101, your source for independent, local, national, and international news.
But first, the headlines from Free Speech Radio News.
I'm Nell Abram with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. As White House officials continue to reveal details of the targeted killing of Al-Qaeda commander Osama bin Laden, Somali officials announced today that they killed a top Al-Shabaab commander, a Somali-Swedish man, Fuad Mohammed Shengoli. They also claim that two other foreign fighters were among dozens who died in the clashes in Gedo region. We'll have full coverage on the death of Osama bin Laden later in the newscast. In Tripoli, funeral services were held today for Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's youngest son and three of his grandchildren. They were killed over the weekend by a NATO airstrike. Colonel Gaddafi was reportedly present, but not injured. Libyan government spokesperson Musa Ibrahim.
This was a direct operation to assassinate the leader of this country. This is not permitted by international law. It is not permitted by any moral code or principle.
British Prime Minister David Cameron rebuts those claims.
Targeting policy is in line with UN Resolution 1973. It's about preventing the loss of civilian life by hitting the Gaddafi war machine.
The US, UK, and Italian embassies were all attacked after the deaths were announced. Turkey closed its embassy today. The UN pulled all staff out of Tripoli. And rockets continue to rain in besieged Misrata today, leaving humanitarian aid ships unable to approach port. In Yemen, President Ali Abdullah Saleh balked at signing an agreement with the opposition yesterday that would see him step down within a month. Rallies emerged anew when the news broke. Protests percolated in the Maldives over the weekend, where thousands called for President Mohamed Nasheed to quit. Security forces fired tear gas and used batons to break up the rally. At least 30 were hurt. The price of basic goods skyrocketed some 30% in the past few weeks alone after the monetary unit was devalued. President Nasheed was democratically elected in 2008 in the nation's first poll in three decades. Data compiled by a Mexican newspaper shows last month as the deadliest since the start of the country's militarized drug war. Shannon Young has more from Mexico.
The Millennial newspaper's independent count of drug war-related deaths finds 1,402 victims were reported in the month of April. That makes last month the deadliest since the start of the four-and-a-half-year-old military offensive against organized crime. Nearly a quarter of April's documented deaths were found in mass graves. The largest discoveries were in the states of Tamaulipas and Durango, where dozens of mass graves have yielded some 300 victims. And those deaths may only be the tip of the iceberg. News of the mass graves prompted families of missing persons to come forward en masse. The Mexican Attorney General's office now acknowledges the number of people who have disappeared since 2007 may number more than 6,000. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
Just days before a unity agreement is inked between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, Israel reacts by withholding the PA's tax revenues. Rami Almagari has more.
The Palestinian Authority is asking for international support today after Israel announced it will delay delivery of $88 million in tax monies due to the West Bank's government. Israel's finance minister said yesterday the move is prompted by the unity deal and concerned the funds will go to Hamas. Dr. Ghassan Al-Khatib is a spokesman for the PA's government in the West Bank.
Israel has no right of withholding them because it's not Israeli money. It's not donations by Israel, it's our money.
The tax money roughly constitutes two-thirds of the Palestinian Authority's annual budget. It is not the first time that Israel has withheld such funds. It did so in 1997, 2001, and 2006. Following the Oslo Accords of 1993, Israel began collecting tax money for commercial goods in and out of the Palestinian territories on behalf of the PA. Rami Al-Mighari, FSRN, Gaza.
May Day rallies took place around the world over the weekend. Garment workers in Bangladesh and Indonesian laborers in Jakarta rallied for safe workplaces and livable wages. South Koreans called for better labor laws. Demonstrations in Germany turned violent when police fired water cannons at protesters. In Venezuela, the day was marked by both those who support the policies of President Hugo Chavez and those that don't. Opposition politician Leopoldo Lopez.
The current economic model destroys jobs and leaves no room for future employment opportunities.
That clip courtesy of Press TV. And May Day in Havana was marked by hundreds of thousands of Cubans largely supporting dramatic economic shifts officially approved at the recent Communist Congress. Residents of Cairo, Missouri, are waiting to find out if the Army Corps of Engineers is going to blow a hole in a levee to expand the Mississippi River's ability to accommodate floodwaters. The town would be spared, but the move would flood 100,000 acres of farmland. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to grant a request from state officials to stop the intentional levee breach. For Free Speech Radio News from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
Thanks to FSRN for bringing us those headlines. Daily headlines and their full newscast can be found at FSRN.org. I'm Ross Henry.
And I'm Martin Lemlin. Last week, CITR News featured an interview with Vancouver Kingsway MP Don Davies. And today we're going to run conversations with all three major opposition members, starting with the Conservatives' Trang Nguyen. It should be noted that while these interviews were being conducted, CITR was in the throes of a 24 hours of radio hell. So if you hear a faint buzz of rock and roll in the background, it's merely due to this reporter's unsuccessful attempts to find a quiet corner. Kingsway riding is shaping up to be quite an interesting one. It was a very close race in 2008 between the Liberals, Conservatives, and the winning NDPs with Don Davies. I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with Conservative Representative Trang Nguyen earlier this week, and CITR is happy to broadcast that interview. Mrs. Nguyen, this is your first campaign in the Kingsway riding. Why do you feel that you're qualified to represent the constituents of that particular riding?
I grew up in the riding for 18 years. I went to elementary school, which were David Livingston and General Worth. I also went to Sir John Tupper. I went to SFU for my criminology and psych minor. I was a field reporter for Omni and China AM 1320 and Fairchild Radio. I know the Raiden well. I have been door knocking, and I've been talking to people in the Raiden regarding their issues and concerns, and I think that I would be best represent them in Ottawa.
What concerns have been brought to your attention through your campaigning by the constituents?
As you know, that the house market here is very pricey, and they're concerned about the economy. They want a stable, good job, and lower taxes, and also they like to have a safe neighborhood. As you know, the party that would fight against crime, unlike Mr. Don Davies, who had voted down S6, which was the bill for serious crime, for a serious crime, and so people are very concerned about this, and they want to fight against crime in the neighborhood.
How do you feel that Don Davies has represented the Kingsway riding during the past 2.5 years?
I'm very concerned with one of his comments in the Vancouver Sun. He said that last time I was a Caucasian man, I prevail over a Chinese woman. He should know that in this riding, more than 7% of Canadians are of various backgrounds. And for him to bring this ethnicity and gender into this election, I'm very concerned with this comment, because as a woman, I think that, you know, we can bring something into, bring in more of a new perspective. And as Jack Layton, his leader, who said that there should be more women in Parliament. So I'm very concerned with this comment, because I think that it should be the person who represents the riding, who represents all Canadians, regardless of their ethnicity and gender, and I'm here to represent all Canadians.
And what do you think needs to be done in the next 3 or 4 years, the next term?
I think that people are very concerned with the economy. There are many small businesses in the riding, and they want tax relief and more jobs created in the riding. And especially fighting against crime. They are not happy. They're very frustrated with the people breaking into their homes, stealing their properties. And I think those should be the two main concerns in the riding.
You talk about creating new jobs, but how would you go about that?
As a small business woman myself, I understand that when you have a small business, you need to hire more help. And with the Conservative platform, we, if re-elected, we will introduce the EI benefits for employers by covering that EI benefit if they hire new help, and they can use that money towards hiring more employees to help with their businesses.
I'd just like to touch on the HST while I have you here, because in June, if BC decides to get rid of the HST, there is a possibility that $1.6 billion could be taken out of the BC's economy. What do you feel would be the repercussions of such an action, and how does the Conservative government stand on it?
I just want to tell you that the HST is a provincial matter, and I want to also touch about the NDP government in Nova Scotia raised the HST up 2 percentage points. And, you know, I'm going to be waiting for the referendum, and that's the decision of the voters in BC. And we'll see how, you know, that would play out. And I'm going to be working with the province jurisdiction at that time.
Yes, but the $1.6 billion was federally funded, and it would be taken back by the federal government, would it not?
You know, right now it's too soon for us to say about that. We have to wait until the outcome of the referendum.
I know it was a very, very close race in 2008. What do you feel the political atmosphere is at this moment in the Kingsway riding?
Like I said, I think that people want a Conservative majority. They do not want a coalition run by the NDP, whose record is very clear. They had voted down every single tax cut delivered by the Conservative government, including cutting the GST, the income splitting for seniors, and tax relief for small business. And they're about spending and increasing more taxes. And also, people do not want a coalition with a party, a Bloc Québécois, who wants to break this country apart.
Thank you very much for your time, Mrs. Nguyen, and good luck in your campaign. Trang Nguyen is a Conservative candidate in the Vancouver Kingsway riding.
We're going to take a quick break, but hang tight. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I was a prisoner.
Cocaine addiction.
Cocaine took my dreams. It made me lie, steal.
Cocaine took my will, my soul.
And all I wanted was more cocaine. Cocaine Anonymous gave me freedom and saved my life. If you got a problem with cocaine, pick up the phone. We're here to help.
1-866-662-8300.
Welcome back to CITR News 101. I'm Martin Lemelin.
And I'm Ross Henry. In national news, if you haven't filed your taxes, the clock is ticking. You have until midnight tonight to file 2010 tax returns. After that, you'll be subject to a penalty. Usually the deadline for taxes falls on April 30th, but since the traditional date fell on a weekend, the deadline was extended to tonight. Under Canadian taxation rules, citizens have until midnight and file and pay balance owing on their 2010 income tax and benefit returns. Luckily, tax offices such as H&R Block are extending their hours today to deal with any last-minute inquiries.
In international news, after 9 years, 231 days, and a handful of hours, the man thought to be the mastermind behind the worst terrorist attack on American soil has been killed. It has been confirmed through a family DNA match that Osama bin Laden was killed last night and buried at sea today. For nearly a year, the U.S. military has been planning an attack on a mansion-like compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. Through an insider leak, U.S. intelligence believed the building was erected for the sole purpose of hiding the world's most wanted terrorist criminal and leader of Al-Qaeda. U.S. President Barack Obama made a public address last night concerning the victory.
Last August, after years of painstaking work by our intelligence community, I was briefed on a possible lead to bin Laden. It was far from certain, and it took many months to run this thread to ground. I met repeatedly with my national security team as we developed more information about the possibility that we had located bin Laden hiding within a compound deep inside Pakistan. And finally, last week, I determined that we had enough intelligence to take action and authorized an operation to get Osama bin Laden and bring him to justice. Today, at my direction, the United States launched a targeted operation against that compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
Late last night, a firefight seized within the 18-foot-high security walls of the compound for upwards of 40 minutes as a small team of U.S. Special Operations officers encountered resistance from bin Laden and three other men. In the end, all four combatants were killed, along with a woman one of the men was using as a human shield, officials say. There were no American casualties. According to officials, the key break involved a trusted courier to the bin Laden family. U.S. intelligence tracked the courier for several years and noticed that he had no discernible wealth to justify living at such an outlandish property. Further investigation forced the conclusion that the compound had been built to hide something of extraordinary significance. After two National Security Council meetings within 10 days, President Obama gave the go-ahead order to the mission that would finally see the slaying of America's most wanted man on Friday. To the tearful jubilation of a nation, Osama bin Laden is dead and his body already buried at sea, handled in proper Islamic tradition.
And in election coverage, Stephen Harper has managed to maintain his composure during the course of his campaign, despite a seemingly strong public outcry for his removal from office. Few doubt Harper's Conservatives will secure the most votes today, but he continues to warn us of the potential dangers of a coalition government, which seems to his greatest fear as he urges Canadians to elect a majority Conservative government. Riding a platform of low taxes and economic stability, Harper says that Canada's economic recovery is still quite fragile, and the best way to restore our pre-recession economy is to continue with the next phase of his economic action plan, which he boasts created nearly 500,000 new jobs since 2009, tightening financial security and stability for Canadian families and businesses. His platform also claims to eliminate our $56 billion deficit in 3.5 years. But opposition members have scrutinized his plans to build what is being referred to as mega prisons and purported desire to imprison almost any breakers of the law. Through thick and thin, Harper has stood by his party's platform, which seems to be one of the few platforms that encourages the crackdown of human smuggling and strengthening of our armed forces.
Liberal leader Michael Ignatieff seems to be in serious jeopardy of losing his title as official leader of the opposition. He has maintained his objection of the polls showing the Liberals losing serious ground to the NDP, saying that anything could happen on Election Day, that the power to change our government is in the voters' hands, not the pundits. The Liberal platform is heavily geared towards family care and providing financial relief to those nursing sick loved ones, as well as giving up to $1,500 to high school students who wish to pursue a post-secondary education, and a credit to companies making an active effort to convert to green energy sources. The Liberals can take credit for bringing in the Canada Health Act in 1984 and promise to provide complete access to quality and timely health care to all Canadians, regardless of their ability to pay and the province in which they happen to reside. Ignatieff has managed to shrug off the conservative sentiment of his supposed unpatriotism and come away with a fairly strong campaign featuring a broad and varied platform.
And riding the wave of an orange crush, Jack Layton is making his final campaigning push today with a series of appearances that started in Montreal this morning and the big finale tonight at his rally in Scarborough, Ontario. Layton has toured the country over the past month promoting the NDP's platform, which has largely focused on improving health care and pension plans. His pro-labor platform also promises to reinstate a nationwide minimum age, cooperating with provinces to lower housing costs and energy bills, as well as strengthening benefit packages for workers. Whether the NDP's recent surge is legitimate or a reality made up by the media is yet to be seen. Layton looks as though he's thrived under pressure and whisperings that this could be his last federal campaign and is at the helm of political juggernaut that could see him become the next official leader of the opposition.
It looks to be a do-or-die scenario for Elizabeth May and the Green Party. The Greens took a few steps back this year when May was not allowed to participate in the leaders' debate, as she was in 2008. She held rallies coast-to-coast in an effort to persuade the CRTC Board of Directors to allow her into the debates, but her efforts were not acknowledged. May has focused most of her political attention on her scenic Gulf Islands riding, pushing a platform with an emphasis on creating environmentally friendly jobs, expanding employment insurance and organic farms and fisheries, as well as a commitment to explore Canada's democratic health and revamping our electoral system. Although May claims the board that kept her out of the debates has no guidelines, it was reported that her exclusion was due to the fact that her party held no parliamentary seats. If the Greens are unable to secure a seat in Parliament this time around, it seems unlikely that they'll become a major force in Canadian politics without considering a merger with a like-minded party.
We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver with Martin and Ross.
Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good.
The 6th annual Vancouver International Burlesque Festival is coming May 5th to 7th.
May 5th and 6th, come down to the Rickshaw Theatre for performances from Luscious Pink, Pandora and the Locksmiths, Bloody Betty and the Seven Deadly Sins, Pasties and a G-String, Sinner St. Burlesque Seattle, and Sex at the Circus. May 7th, the Vogue Theatre will be on fire with performances from Burgundy Bricks, Roxy Delight, Judith Stein, April O'Peel, Cheesecake Burlesque, Kitty Nights, Starlet Harlots, and many, many more.
For tickets, a complete festival schedule, and as much titillating information as you can handle, go online to vanburlesquefest.com.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Ross Henry.
And I'm Martin Lumlin. You're hearing us on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're online at CITR.ca, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia. Thanks for being with us. It's now time to continue our coverage of the Vancouver Kingsway riding. I had a chance to speak with Green Party candidate Louise Boutin, and here is our conversation. Coverage of the Vancouver Kingsway riding. I had an opportunity to speak with Green Party candidate Louise Boutin, who, as well as campaigning, is a strong supporter of Apathy is Dead, which is a national campaign that will attempt to double the youth vote this election. Thank you very much for being with us, Ms. Boutin. Now, in your campaigning, you've targeted, to some extent, young people. What concerns have been brought up? What have you been discussing with them?
What we talk a lot about is education because, you know, as I talk to them, the big issue is being in debt once they come out, and secondly, jobs, you know, what jobs are going to be there for them. So those are big issues, and a lot of times when I've talked to people and I've campaigned with the Greens both provincially and federally, I would say that 50% of the people that I talk to between 18 and I would say 30 never voted. So those are the people I talked most to and spent time with, and I hope we've convinced a lot of them to go out and vote. Basically, that's our first intention, is that they exercise their democratic right to vote. And secondly, we hope that they vote for the Green as a progressive, forward-thinking party.
You mentioned students being indebted after they leave school and not being able to find a job. Speaking in a technical sense, how would you be able to go about lowering the tuition rates, if at all?
I don't know that we can do that. Obviously, with the Green Party, our conversations are always to work with other entities to help make changes in those areas. So obviously, there would be financial support to the universities, but also especially to the students by creating, you know, at first about 40,000 jobs for the university students. And in working those jobs at the end of their term, whether it be a summer job, they would then get about $4,000 for their following year. And then we would increase that program as well as enhancing the bursary system that we presently have.
Since the riding was so close in 2008, what do you feel are your goals for the Green Party and the political atmosphere in general for the Kingsway riding?
Right now in Kingsway, I feel that, again, it's a very divided population. I do feel, though, that in looking around and talking to people, you know, that the big issue is to vote strategically. So we try to tell them to vote with their hearts. At this time, after some debates, I would say that obviously the NDP is very strong here. So, I mean, I don't see a contention as much as it was in 08. I see them growing forward or going forward. And one of the things I've done is talk to Don Davies, and certainly their platform is looking much better to us. We see some ideas that we have in our Green Book or our Vision Green Book that are basically a part of their platform too, so that's encouraging. So that's I see a little less. There will be a three-way race, but I think that the NDP will definitely come out on top. We certainly, my goal is to increase, we had about 3,000 votes the last time, and I'm aiming to get that number up to the 4,000 mark by getting voters that haven't voted before that were disinterested. So we're trying to get new voters to go out and vote, and I think that we're being successful at doing that.
Are there any other concerns that are prominent among the constituents that, aside from the student debt?
Really, my riding are very conscious about the environment, and they're very disgruntled that the other parties are not talking about the environment. So, you know, there's many issues that need to be addressed for us in BC, such as the super tankers coming into Kitimat, the gas, natural gas pipeline coming across the province, and, you know, various issues like that. So, you know, nothing is being addressed on television or in anybody's campaign. They're keeping it really low. So that's something that the constituents in my riding, a lot of them are complaining about, and they're very, you know, they want a clean, healthy environment for their kids, you know, for their children and for the future. So that's another area that's, and the youth also feel very strongly about that.
You'll have to excuse me as I revert back to the HST. There's kind of a gray zone as to whether it's a provincial or a federal issue. But if the province does vote to get rid of the HST in June, there's a possibility that $1.6 billion could be taken out of the BC economy, and that would be taken out by the federal government. What do you think would be the implications if that happened?
Well, I think it would have a horrendous implication on the BC economy, and I think that realistically, once given, I don't think that they would be able to claw that back. I certainly know that the NDP have spoken out about it and ourselves, that we would definitely not do that. I mean, it would be a huge challenge and a huge burden on the population of BC. So whoever gets into power, that's going to be a discussion between the provincial government and the federal government. The strong leaning right now is that it'll be voted down, and that is a big concern. So again, the two principal partners will be speaking, and that's whoever wins the, well, actually the Liberals here and the Conservatives if they win the election, or the NDP by wild chance. So those are the two parties that will have to discuss it and both agree to what happened. I don't think the federal government will force the issue on the provincial government here. It'll be something that they both come up with.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the UBC community before we let you go?
I think the big issue that we want to, or I want to project to the young people, you are a university radio station, is that, you know, go out and vote. I mean, it's so important. It's your democratic right, and it's very, very important. I know when I was a student, it was, you know, the early 70s, Trudeau was there, and of course we had, you know, a lot of mania, if you will. We all jumped on the bandwagon, and that's, you know, because he had a lot of passion. I think that we, the Green, have a lot of passion. I see a lot of staleness out there, and I think that we can provide, you know, a lot of those answers. That aside, I think it's important, no matter who you vote for, to go out and vote.
Well, thank you very much, Madame Boutin, and good luck with your campaign. Louise Boutin is the Green Party candidate in the Vancouver Kingsway riding. I'm Martin Lemelin.
Thanks for that story, Martin. It's time for your weekday weather forecast. CITR weather, we're looking at rain ending tonight. It'll be windy near the water this evening with a chance of showers. Tomorrow, cloudy with a 30% chance of showers in the morning, but the sun should peek out from behind the clouds in the afternoon with a high of 14 degrees. On Wednesday, we're looking at clouds and rain through the weekend of and through the end of this week. It's currently 9 degrees with light showers out at UBC at the moment. And in Vancouver, that's CITR weather. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. I'm Ross Henry, and he is
Martin Lemelin.
Listening to CITR News 101.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy, in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so big pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Are you interested in radio, but not quite sure how to get involved?
CITR is the place for you. We are a volunteer-driven campus and community radio station with a variety of volunteer opportunities. Want to become an on-air programmer? Learn about promotions? Maybe become a news or arts reporter? Come learn about all the ways you can become involved at CITR. Volunteer orientations are held on the first Monday of every month at 6:30 p.m. If the first Monday falls on a statutory holiday, the orientation moves to the second Monday. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
Welcome back to CITR News 101. I'm Martin Lumlin.
And I'm Ross Henry. We're going to conclude our show, or continue our show, with Martin's final interview of the Kingsway opposition members. Here is Liberal candidate Wendy Yan.
Coverage of the Vancouver Kingsway riding and our interviews of the opposition members today. I'm proud to present CITR's interview with Liberal Party candidate Wendy Yan. Mrs. Yan, thank you for being with us. To start off, in your campaigning, what have you found the concerns of your constituents to be? Are there any similarities between this election and the one in 2008?
The people of this riding have always wanted a government that actually does take their concerns seriously versus a conservative government that's actually having the wasteful spendings. They're spending billions and billions of dollars on fighter jets, you know, and jails, U.S. mega-style prisons that actually have proven to be failing, and dollars, you know, big dollars on corporate giveaways. When we already have $56 billion deficit, never ever had we had this high deficit in the history of Canada. So the choice is very clear, I think, for the people on May the 2nd.
Why do you feel the Liberals are equipped to address these issues more than anyone else?
Because people are telling me that our family pack and what Liberal Party stands for really resonate with the ordinary Canadian families.
What are the things that the Liberal Party stands for?
Post-secondary education, that is child care, and that is health care and family care, early learning and child care, and pensions and economy. So I'm telling you, I feel very good about the campaign so far.
How do you feel the NDP incumbent Don Davies has represented the Kingsway riding over the past 2.5-3 years?
Don has been in Ottawa for two years and a half already, and he's been claiming that he has done a lot for Vancouver Kingsway, but we all know that just recently during the campaign, he actually called a press conference and said he's going to be making sure that the crime issue in Vancouver Kingsway is going to be addressed. When he, as a matter of fact, voted down the crime bill in Ottawa. So I do want to question him as to why he's only calling for a press conference to address the crime issues during a campaign when he had all that 2 years and a half in Ottawa to be addressing this issue that's actually dear and near to a lot of people's heart in Vancouver Kingsway.
Speaking of the crime issue, how would you go about reducing crime without resorting to tactics like building mega prisons?
See, the root reason, the root for actually the crime issue is not putting people behind bars, is really, first of all, the poverty issue and also the prevention issue and its education issue. So if I get the honor to get elected in, you know, for Vancouver Kingsway, I would make sure that we will actually have the funding from the federal government to put forth into programs that educate the youth to make sure that they know that, you know, what to do when they, you know, like during the process. In other words, you know, the prevention and education programs are going to be totally very important, and we should make sure that we actually address the issue from the root instead of putting people behind bars.
Earlier you mentioned our country's $56 billion deficit. Realistically, how would you go about getting rid of such a massive amount of deficit?
Well, first of all, we have to cut the spendings of this wasteful government. You know, like I said, you know, they are borrowing money to build jails, to buy jets, and to give big corporations tax breaks. And that is just totally wrong. That's a wrong approach for a country that actually is once, you know, we can be very proud on the world stage. And I think we have to start with reducing the size of the government as well. And, you know, conservative government has been boasting before they came into power that they're going to be cleaning up the government. They're going to be making sure that the government is going to be transparent and accountable. But they're doing exactly the opposite. So I think, you know, we should start off by making sure that on May the 2nd, the conservative government is not going to be, you know, getting the mandate, and people should not be giving them the mandate if you want to seriously tackle the deficit of this country.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
I wanted to say, I've been running, this is my second time running in Vancouver Kingsway. Since 2004, you know, I've been working very hard with the people in this riding and on the doorsteps, whether it's on the streets or doorsteps. I've been hearing lots of issues on the doorsteps. And I think immigration issue is a very important issue as well in this riding. And post-secondary education accessibility is a big, big issue in this riding, because a lot of immigrants came to this country with a dream, and a lot of the parents, you know, immigrated to this country with a hope that their kids are going to be having the best education in the world. But little did they know that when they got here, they realized that the tuition fees are so unaffordable, and for an average family income family, you know. And then you know, that's why where Liberal government has this learning passport that gives $1,000 to every high school student who wants to go to university and colleges. And for low income families, we actually give out $1,500, and that's actually equals to $6,000 for the total duration of 4 years. So I wanted to make, you know, stress the importance of this, because the young people of this country is the future of tomorrow, and they deserve to get ahead, and they deserve to get an equal shot at their opportunities. And only a Liberal government is doing something seriously about this issue. And you know, we do believe that if you get the grades, you get a goal. So I think you know, I wanted to make sure that your listeners understand that we are a serious party that are actually addressing the serious concerns of the people out there.
I was actually speaking about this with Green Party candidate Louise Boutin, and we were talking about how you can't actually force universities to lower their tuition. So you've decided to take the opposite route and actually supply students with money before they enter university.
Exactly. We are giving that money I just mentioned ahead of the time, you know, when they're high school student. We make sure that they already are equipped with this amount of money before they go to college. Not like, oh, you know, like other parties who have been claiming that, oh, we're going to be like giving the money to the provinces and for them to be transferring it to the students. You know, that's not going to fly, and that's not going to be helping the students who need it so badly directly. So that's why we Liberal parties are actually doing this to make sure that every high school student who wants to go to universities have this chance, you know, to get ahead.
It seems like a fine idea, but doesn't really get into the bulk of the tuition issue. I mean, $1,500 a year is fine as a start, but some students are leaving school with excesses of $30,000 in debt. Is there room for advancement within this plan that you've adopted?
I totally agree with you. I have a son who's 22 years old and who's going to university, and you know, he's been telling me, "Mom, you know, I work two jobs, and you guys still have to help me big time with the tuition, because I simply cannot afford it myself." You know, and that is actually a very ordinary question that I receive on the doorsteps, you know, day in and day out when I campaign. And I do believe that the federal government has a serious role to play in terms of providing the youth the necessary tools to get ahead.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, Wendy, and best of luck in your campaigning. Wendy Yuan is the Liberal candidate in the Vancouver Kingsway riding. Not too bad at all. We're going to take a little roundtable discussion here about flexing your Democratic muscle and getting out to vote. Mario?
Yes, sir.
I'm joined by Ross Henry and Iqbal.
Hello.
Have you guys voted yet?
I have. Did it this afternoon.
This afternoon? Iqbal's having a...
Yeah, I am a citizen, but I don't have the proper paperwork to prove it right now, so...
About immigration problems. Yeah, I voted this morning. I had a little bit of confusion as to which polling station I was supposed to go to.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who'd you vote for?
I voted for the Pirate Party, because I live in a riding that's pretty much locked.
I don't understand how people... It's not... You're supposed to keep it under wraps who you voted for, but people will tell you other things about themselves.
Or they lie about it. I could have lied just now.
You could have. You could have voted Conservative.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Yeah. I think it's important if you don't know where to vote, because you only got an hour and 15 minutes now before it closes down.
Do it if you haven't.
The phone number to call is, grab a pen and paper, write this down. It's 1-866-546-7622. You tell them your address and they're going to hook you up with where to vote.
Or just go to elections.ca and type in your postal code and it will tell you which building to go to.
Now, a lot of people have been getting turned away because they don't have proper ID. Iqbal, you know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Iqbal's problem. I don't have a driver's license. You just need a birth certificate or a care card and a piece of mail with your address on it.
You didn't have anything with your picture on it?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
I might have been able to do it, though.
You still have an hour.
We'll get out of here and drive you right down there.
I don't have any mail on me, but I don't have a care card. I have an immigration card, and I'm, 10 years old in the picture, so that might not fly.
Yeah. They have the place, the polling station, right downstairs here, the Student Union building.
Yes.
So it's right centrally located. You have no excuse not to vote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even if you think it's worthless.
You're right.
It's your right.
Flex your Democratic muscle.
Yeah.
Any reflections on this campaign and on this election, you guys?
Ooh.
Specific.
I don't know. I'm gonna. It's one of the first ones that I actually really paid attention to, in depth a little bit. So I'm curious to see what the difference is between the hype that we've heard and what the reality of the results are going to be.
Yeah, there. I don't know.
Because it's Stephen Harper's probably going to get the most votes, and it's probably going to be another minority government.
Mm-hmm. Don't think much is going to change.
No. No, it would be interesting if the NDP got into second ahead of the Liberals.
I think the interesting thing about the election has been there's so much focus on party leaders, but these elections aren't won by leaders; they're won by individual ridings. I think some people might go into the booths who might not know and think they're going inside to vote for Harper or later Ignatieff, but then see Joyce Murray and Meredith on the ballot and aren't really sure what to make of that.
Yeah, it's. It's kind of opened my eyes as to our electoral system isn't really that effective in capitalizing on every vote.
Seems like it.
Because
a lot of people, or from what I've heard, people are coming down pretty hard on Harper, but people are also coming down pretty hard on Ignatieff. Mm-hmm. I think Layton might have a little bit of a...
An edge?
Just how we were talking about how it isn't run by leaders, but I think the MDP might have a bit of comeuppance this election.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stephen Harper's been taking a bunch of... bunch of guff, I guess, but I really don't see it changing that much. I don't know. It seems like there's a massive public outcry to get him out of there, but I don't know where it's coming from.
But everyone who's against Harper is going to vote for three different parties, Green, Liberal, NDP. Someone who's going to vote NDP isn't going to vote Conservative.
Yeah.
So the country's kind of split between Conservatives and everyone else,
That's true, because the Conservatives are the only ones with the... that kind of right-wing...
The free market ideology. And, I can't see Liberals taking power because I felt like they were in power for such a long time because the right-wing was split between the Alliance and the Reform. And the Reform. So the right-wing was split. So the Liberals were able to, capitalize on that for so many years. But now it's the other way around. The left is split and the right is unified.
Yeah.
So...
If the Greens don't get a seat, any speculation on their future?
There was one poll I read maybe a week ago, not even a week ago, that said May was statistically tied with Lund.
Really? So that's going to be a nail biter.
Yeah, it was. But I think the poll was commissioned by the Greens.
Oh, all right. I might be a little bit biased.
Yeah, a little bit biased, but even if they're able to fudge numbers slightly to get that's still closer than anyone thought she'd get.
Yeah. And especially between like the Greens and NDPs, they're splitting votes. Like not many, but I mean, their platforms are almost identical, right?
Yeah.
They're pretty much the same, and they're just needlessly splitting the vote, it looks like. Yep. They just bind it together. Then you'd have like a three-party system. You'd have most of the avenues covered.
I'm just checking up on the Twitter feed here, and somebody retweeted, "Woman on Toronto subway seen with a ballot box. Stolen?"
Was there anything in it?
Who knows? What are you going to do with a stolen ballot box?
Stuff it.
This is mine!
I think some interesting races that our listeners might be, you know, curious about, at least in this area. I mean, Vancouver Quadra, Joyce Murray versus Deborah Meredith, I believe, UBC professor. And then there's Vancouver City Centre, which is kind of a lock for the Liberals. But a big one has been Vancouver South, with Desange versus, I forget the Conservative candidate's name, but it's a woman. And I believe in the last election, it was the same two against one another. Desange is a former Premier of BC.
Yeah.
He was an NDP Premier, now he's a Liberal MP. And he won by 20 votes last time.
By 20 votes?
20 votes.
Man, you try and tell me votes don't count. Now we're going to maybe take a little break from FSRN. A little headline.
Right now, actually, let's go to some PSAs.
Yes, public service announcements are good.
CITR.
You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Student Union Building at University of British Columbia.
The Biltmore Cabaret is your home for great live music in Vancouver.
Thursday, May 19th, check out The Manvilles, Rich Hope and His Evil Doers, and A Name Unheard. Doors are at 8 p.m. $10 advance tickets are available from the Biltmore off sale.
Friday, May 20th, don't miss new pornographer Catherine Calder with special guests Himalayan Bear and Louise Burns. This is an early show with doors at 7 p.m. and a curfew of 10:30. $12 advance tickets are available from Red Cat, Zulu, The Biltmore, and online at ticketweb.ca.
Monday, May 23rd, it's Shotgun and Jaybirds, Frederick Squire, and Catherine Mackey playing songs from their new solo albums as well as tunes from their special duets record. White Ash Falls will open the show. Doors are at 8 p.m. $11 advance tickets are available from Red Cat, Zulu, The Biltmore, and TicketWeb.
May 26th and 27th, spend two nights with the legendary No Means No. May 26th, Beekeeper opens the show while Ford Pier does the honors on the 27th. $22 advance tickets are available at Red Cat, Zulu, The Biltmore, and TicketWeb.ca.
We're going to take, I'm going to hand things over to FSRN for a second here, because with the recent assassination of Osama bin Laden, we're all going to be subjected to the jubilation in North America, but FSRN is going to have the reactions from Islamabad residents about the killing.
On the streets of Pakistan, many people didn't believe the news. Some wanted proof. Others were reluctant to share their responses for fear of retribution. Speaking through local social media sites, some Pakistanis said the assassination would fuel extremist attacks within the country. For more reaction on the ground, FSRN's Rose Katapchi reads for our reporter in Pakistan, Gabe Matthews.
In many Pakistani cities, residents are going about their day as usual, going to work, school, and doing shopping. At a busy market in Islamabad, 26-year-old Sunduz Rashid says the killing doesn't mean things will change in Pakistan.
It doesn't really affect the way I live. It's not going to change anything in my living conditions. I don't see any reason for me, at least, to have sympathy with Osama bin Laden. He was the reason that Pakistan has come under attack from so many different countries in the world, so no sympathy for him there.
But many people avoid talking about the death of Osama bin Laden, who was killed by U.S. Special Forces in Abbottabad, just several hours from Islamabad. It's a lush, green, mountainous area and a picnic spot, especially in the summer. Many were surprised to discover bin Laden had been hiding there. Pakistani officials confirmed the death late Monday evening. In a statement, the foreign ministry welcomed the killing, saying Al-Qaeda had declared war on Pakistan, and scores of attacks resulted in the deaths of thousands of innocent Pakistani men, women, and children. But some question whether the U.S. overstepped its role. Idris Bakhtiar is a prominent journalist and analyst who's reported on the bin Laden family's existence in Pakistan.
The operation was conducted by the U.S. forces, and apparently it's against the sovereignty of Pakistan because the foreign forces intruded into Pakistan territory without getting any information, any permission from the Pakistani authorities. But it's nothing new. The drone attacks have been carried on in Pakistan by the American forces. So the Pakistan government has not been protesting against the drone attack, and that's why the Americans intruded into Pakistan and carried out this operation.
More than 30,000 civilians have been killed over the last few years in terrorist attacks, and an estimated 5,000 Pakistan military personnel have been killed in the war against terrorism. Many civilians have also been killed by U.S. drone strikes. Salab Masood works for media in Waziristan. Earlier today, he spoke to Taliban spokesperson Ihsan Ullahand. Masood described that conversation to FSRN.
If Osama is killed in a military operation, then our first targets would be the Pakistan Prime Minister, the President, and Chief of Army Staff. Then we would target American troops to take revenge of bin Laden.
Near the famous Lal Mosque in Islamabad, a group of students play cricket and badminton. One of the students tells FSRN about the death of Osama bin Laden.
It seems like a great drama in order to deceive people. It seems that some countries might have a political interest to do so.
Reading for Gabe Matthews in Islamabad, I'm Rose Khatabji, FSRN.
That's our program for May 2nd, 2011. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, give us a hot news tip, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334. Or you can email news@citr.ca. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter @CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to the past shows at CITR.ca. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. Until next week, I'm Ross Henry.
And I'm Martin Lumlin. For the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Sore Throats Clapping Hands at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.